ladies and gentlemen. It's the show that celebrates WWE. It's Gorilla Position.
Hello, you, and welcome to Gorilla Position. Thank you very much for hitting the download button on this, your pro wrestling slash sports entertainment podcast of pleasure. My name's James D'Lo, your host and your guide through the wonderful world of WWE. Thank you for tuning in to this, the last episode of GP of 2020. This fiery trash can of a year. The last episode of 2020, and episode 299 of the biggest and best WWE podcast in the UK, the only show of its kind to be supported, endorsed, and promoted by WWE themselves. So here we are, and to mark the occasion, to mark the final show of 2020, it's not just myself and Kevin on the line. We have a rapper, we have a DJ, we have a WWE lifer joining us. He's fellow Goosebump, the man they call Skillet. You're right, my Skills?
Hey guys, how are you both today?
Very well, very well. And of course, on the line too, Strictly Come Dancing champion, WWE lifer, Mr. Kevin Clifton. You right, my Kevs?
What's up, Boos?
What's up, Boos? It's nice to have both of you on the line. Unfortunately, Ash couldn't join us. He's getting his car serviced or some such idiotic excuse for not being part of this, the final show of the year. So I sort of feel like we need to slag him off, really, for this.
Yeah, priorities, Ash.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, yes, if there's a family emergency, you can't make the show. That's fine. Work commitments, that's fine. Getting your car serviced and there being a bit of a delay in the garage, so he's got to go and pick it up. Just pick it up tomorrow, Ash.
Terrible.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
No commitment. Excuses.
James, get rid of him.
Well, I think it's about time that we announce that, unfortunately, Ash Rose will be future endeavoured. You know, we wish him well in all his future endeavours.
Send him off to play with Sting.
There you go.
joking, of course. Ash, we love and miss you. Thank you for everything this year. It's a strange year for everyone, of course, and it's been so hard to get everyone together. I've done it a few times across the year, but mainly it's just been me plus one, sometimes me plus two. But yeah, it's been a funny old year. But that's it. 2020 can do one, and then 2021 we're going to come back with a bang. And as I said, this is episode 299, so we are going to kick off 2021 in proper fashion, in proper style, with a big bang, with episode 300 of Gorilla Position. I cannot believe, Skills, and you've been here from, I mean, way back in the day. You've been part of this show for like, what, 5 years now?
Absolutely.
Can you believe we're approaching episode 300?
I know, it's gone so fast, and it's you know what? This journey has been such a fun one, and I'm so excited that episode 300 just round the corner. And hopefully next year will be such a great year for all of us that we can continue to do more live shows and celebrate the success of GP.
Absolutely. Well said, Skills. Well said, Skills. Right, let's talk some WWE. We're going to rattle through NXT and SmackDown and Raw and just everything generally going on in the wrestling world at the moment. So let's start with NXT. Kev, what's your feeling? Are you excited about what's going on the Golden Black brand? God, I can't talk
NXT,
today.
Yeah, NXT is always good. I was particularly excited. I'm particularly excited now we've got Karrion Kross coming back.
Yeah,
that's really exciting for me because I was really excited when him and Scarlett first sort of turned up, and then it was a shame when he got injured, and obviously he was being pushed as a, you know, a big title run. It was exciting because they started off with a sort of, you know, Finn Balor was there. It was like, I'm back. And who's going to be the number one contender? And, you know, Damian Priest was in the ring. Kyle O'Reilly was in the ring. Pete Dunne was in the ring. And they're all sort of trying to put their point across. They all want a bit of Finn. They all want a title shot. And I was thinking, like, any of these I'm looking forward to, like, whatever happens here would be great. And then Scarlett turned up on the ramp as Finn was walking back and basically said, well, she didn't say anything, did she, Scarlett?
She didn't. And it was nice because Finn just said, all right, yeah, I know what you're going to say. TikTok, TikTok, blah, yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
And he was like, tell him whenever he's ready.
Yeah. Whenever he's ready, I'm ready. I really enjoyed this opening segment. I think it's great to have Finn back. And as we talked about in our reaction show for War Games, I loved his vignette during that pay-per-view when he was saying, you know, enjoy the spectacle, enjoy the thrills, enjoy the team sports. But once all this carnage is over, the eyes are back on the prince. And I loved that. And I loved that sort of that narrative thread that was running through this. And also I love Finn coming out and being quite honest and sort of going, yeah, bragging rights, brand supremacy, phew, not interested.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he sort of dismissed War Games. He dismissed Survivor Series. He's just like, this is about me. This business is about me. And you're right. The options for the number one contendership. Obviously, we've got Karrion Kross returning, but Pete Dunne, who by the way, really really needs to lay off the sunbeds or the fake tan.
Yeah,
he looked
like Strictly.
Well, yeah, I mean, worse than that, he looked like the Tango Man. Do you remember from those ads? He looked very, very orange, like classic Brit living in Orlando. but Kyle O'Reilly was out there, Damian Priest, as you say, and it is exciting. I think when I saw the three of them out there with Finn, it really to me highlighted that Pete Dunne still doesn't really have a lot of confidence with his mic skills, like compared to Kyle O'Reilly and especially Damian Priest, who just comes across more assured and more confident on the mic. I sort of thought Pete Dunne was struggling a little bit.
I know what you mean, which is why his sort of gimmick works when he stays silent most of the time. Like when he's with McAfee and that gang, he tends to just almost no sell everything, doesn't he? Just like even when the Luke and Birch are behind sort of reacting and shouting things while McAfee's doing his promo, Pete Dunne usually just stands there staring at the camera, doesn't he? Like sort of Pete Dunne in that zone reminds me of, like, you know, there's always just like one knobhead kid on the estate. Do you know what I mean? It was like stood there in the corner and it's like, just don't talk to him because he's just waiting for someone to pick a fight so he can have a fight. Like, he's that kid.
Yeah. I mean, the sort of silent killer shtick works very well for Pete Dunne, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just the classic thing of hide the weaknesses, accentuate the strengths, because he's obviously got a lot of strengths. I mean, skills. You and I have spent a lot of time with Pete Dunne. Super nice guy, but just so incredibly talented in the ring. It's just on the mic, he's just not quite there yet.
Hmm. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
This
is going to go. Gone.
I was hoping skills would come in with a response there, but he just didn't. Oh.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, to be honest. I mean, I don't know what I can follow up with that. I think we all know how great Pete Dunne is. I just feel mic-wise, he has never really impressed me. And it's a shame that he hasn't evolved yet to the level that we would hope. But I guess, you know, having McAfee as a mouthpiece, I guess that could really help him, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, actually, because we talk about this with Pete Dunne. And whenever I see a talent like Pete Dunne and I think, oh, my God, you are, I mean, just in terms of an in-ring performer, you're one of the best in the world. I think back to his match with Tyler Bate in Chicago in May 2017. It was just before GP150 and that live show with Pete.
The best NXT matches ever, by the way.
Absolutely astonishing. But then I think of someone like Pete Dunne moving up to the main roster, and I think when we talk about Raw, we'll talk about people like Keith Lee, and just that transition from NXT to the main roster is not working at the moment. And just for talents like Pete Dunne, I just think, just stay where you are. Stay where you are and don't go anywhere near Monday Night Raw. But yes, the title picture is looking quite exciting. And I think tonight on NXT, we've got Pete Dunne versus Kyle O'Reilly, with the winner facing NXT champ Finn Balor at New Year's Evil on the 6th of January. So any predictions for tonight's match? Who do you want to see in a title match with Finn out of those two?
Well, we've just had Kyle O'Reilly, haven't we? That match
was amazing, by the way.
So are we all going Pete Dunne?
I'm going to go with Pete Dunne.
I think the thing is, if you have Pete Dunne, you then get potentially more story. As you say, we've just seen O'Reilly and Balor, but if you get Pete Dunne, you get Lorcan and Birch involved, and crucially, you get McAfee potentially involved as well, setting something up maybe between McAfee and Finn down the line, which in my mind is one of the biggest matches they could do right now. And if that, it may, you know, maybe they're holding out for maybe WrestleMania weekend and the takeover that happens at the end of March. Maybe that is something they've got planned.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we've seen Pete Dunne versus Finn Balor in a WWE ring, have we?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think we have.
I certainly don't remember it if we have.
So it'd be good to see.
Yeah, that'd be nice. We've also got Toni Storm versus Rhea Ripley in a grudge match tonight. So let's talk about the women and some of the action that happened last Wednesday. We had a really good match. Who was it? It was Raquel Gonzalez versus Ember Moon. And in fact, this was the main event of the show. And Raquel Gonzalez picking up another big victory after her pinning Io Shirai, the NXT Women's Champion, in the War Games match. And remind me, I want to talk about the fallout of War Games in a second. But what, Kev, what did you think of this this main event?
Yeah, good. And I think they're starting to put a lot of stock in Raquel Gonzalez. I think she's clearly getting a push. I mean, she won clean, didn't she, over Ember?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so she's clearly getting a push now, and they've built it into a big match. You know, they had a stare down at the end, didn't they, Rhea Ripley and Raquel? So that they're building this into a sort of big fight feel between these two, so that they obviously have a lot of confidence in her.
So what happened? So Raquel Gonzalez got the clean victory over Ember Moon. After the match, Toni Storm came to the ring, seemingly looking for a pound of flesh of Ember Moon, but Ember Moon's War Games teammate Rhea Ripley arrived to provide backup. And then, yeah, as you say, that led to a stare down between Raquel Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley, which, as you say, like, these are the two female titans of the brand. They're both big, you know, like they're tall, they're big in stature, and they've both got this sort of X factor, I would say. You know, I've been really impressed with Gonzalez recently, and, you know, we all love Rhea Ripley. I think just the shame of it is that we've already seen the match. Like, it was building and building, and then they threw it away when they had a match. It wasn't even on pay-per-view, was it?
I can't remember, but they did have a match, yeah.
It was like a month or so ago, just on TV. Yeah. And to me, that's slightly frustrating.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, when you kind of push the trigger a bit too early with these decisions, it does kind of doesn't give one to be so excited about. But, you know, it should be quite still, you know, these two are still a good, you know, very good warriors in the ring. And where I've kind of been in and out of wrestling, for me personally, I'm quite excited to see this. But yes, I do agree with you. They should have kind of waited a little bit if they're going to have this as a major pay-per-view match. But yeah, we'll see.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Skills. You being sort of in and out of wrestling, I want to discuss the elephant in the room a little bit, in the fact that you're obviously keeping fairly quiet at the moment because you are not as up to speed as, you know, me and Kev who are watching everything. But why is that? I know we spoke back in the summer and you were really struggling with the lack of crowds, and you found the time pre-Thunderdome quite difficult to watch and you just weren't enjoying it. What is it now? I feel like you're into it more than you were earlier in the summer, but is it the creative that you're not enjoying? Is it still the lack of crowd? What is it for you?
I don't even want to list pinpoint just WWE. I'm also talking about wrestling in general. I mean, I did watch the latest AEW pay-per-view when Sting made his appearance, and I watched the whole pay-per-view of that, and I did enjoy that. But it's just, I just feel wrestling at the moment is just not driving me to watch it creatively. I don't think it's very creative at the moment. I feel like I'm seeing the same old storylines over and over again, and the same old wrestling matches over and over again. I feel like in terms of wrestling, every wrestler wrestles the same. And I just, you know, I'm like you guys, I've been a wrestling fan since I was a kid. And I think all three of us could vividly remember the differences between a Bret Hart and a Shawn Michaels, or a differences between a Stone Cold and a Rock. Today, I just feel everybody wrestles the same. You know, you've got Keith Lee flying off the air doing cruiserweight stuff. You've got cruiserweight doing heavyweight stuff. It's just, I just don't see a big difference.
Well, I think that's totally fair and totally valid, and actually sort of chimes in with something that I put on the Twitter feed literally a few hours ago. This morning, I tweeted the video of Vince McMahon doing his introduction to the Attitude Era, essentially. So it was December 15th, I think it happened, in 1997. He kicked off Monday Night Raw with this sort of 2.5 minute piece to camera saying, "We think, frankly, you're tired of having your intelligence insulted." And that classic famous speech he did. And I wrote on Twitter, it's been 23 years since Vince McMahon formally introduced us to the Attitude Era. WWE, quote unquote, embarked on a more innovative and contemporary show, more invigorating than ever before. With Raw's all-time low ratings this week, maybe it's high time for another vibrant, creative direction, as he put it. Yeah. And I think there's something in that. I think especially on Monday Night Raw, there are creative issues, and there's a lot to enjoy, and it's sort of nothing against the talents, but I do think so often the talents are playing professional wrestlers, they're not being professional wrestlers. I feel like back in the day it was like a way of life, you know. Exactly. And they were all a bit tougher, and obviously there was lots of things wrong with the lifestyle back in the day, should we say, but still I think there's just a bit of a grittiness missing.
Yeah, and I feel like today there's obviously there is loads of wrestlers who have different styles from each other, but you do have, I would say, there's 10 different versions of Daniel Bryan's, there's 10 different versions of a Roman Reigns, there's 10 different versions of a John Cena, there's I don't think there's much to tell the difference between two different wrestlers today. There's so many different versions of another wrestler today. So, and so many people are using the same moves. Like the Canadian Destroyer is one of the moves that is just used everywhere. And I used to love that move back in 2002 when Petey Williams did it, because it was a rare move. He was the only one that was doing it. Today, that's a drop kick today. And I just feel, and everybody's doing that move. And it's just, I don't know. I just feel I can't really get into it like I used to. Don't get me wrong. I do honestly believe the fans is a major factor. And I do believe the fans will make me get excited to watch wrestling again once they're allowed to get back into the arenas. But right now, I'm just seeing a lot of repetitiveness in wrestling. I'm just not really gravitating me to it.
Well, I think it's really interesting you saying all this. And I think it's good to be honest and actually talk openly about this and not just like pretend, oh, we love everything and, you know, this is great and, you know, all the performers are good. But so, Kev, let me throw this question over to you. Like, to Skill's point about a lot of the performers kind of being the same, and a lot of the talents, their characters are more sort of embedded in reality compared to the sort of older school, more cartoon comic book style characters. Do you think wrestling would be better, or do you think it could even live in this day and age in that old school way where you have these over the top characters? Or do you think that it's just evolved because it's sort of keeping up with society and trends and things like that?
Yeah, like it's a good point, Skills. And I think as you were talking, I was thinking, I wonder if it is to do with the total sort of breakdown now of kayfabe. We've got so much access to the real people now. Whereas like when we used to watch it when we were kids, that, you know, we call them WWE superstars. They really were superstars. And whereas I suppose like now, like say I've just got, it's paused in front of me, like halfway through Raw, there's, you know, I've just watched AJ Styles in that fight, and AJ Styles is acting a certain way in the ring. And the next thing, like I might come off this and just sort of idly scroll through Instagram and see AJ Styles just talking as a normal guy. Or I can switch over on the WWE Network and see him talking about The Undertaker, or, you know, like this. And it's wicked, like, because we all love it. Like, we all love all the backstage stuff. And we're on this podcast talking about all the stuff and the way it's put together. And we sort of like, you know, we talk about everything in detail. And we find it all so fascinating. But I just wonder if there's so much access to who these real people are now, that what we see is, when we watch it, is them doing a performance. And we see them all week anyway on social media. So it's not like before, when we used to wait for that one night a week when Raw was on to see The Rock, you know, come out, and he was an absolute superstar.
Yeah.
Now it's, you know, we can, and the Rock could be heel Rock, you know, he could be a bad guy and tearing people apart on the mic. But like, if that was now, we could turn on our phones at the same time and see him singing to his daughter.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if it's something to do with that like we're just so used to it. Like, I know the curtain was pulled back a long time ago, but the curtain doesn't even exist now, let alone being pulled back. Do you know what I mean? I wonder if it's something to do with that.
And maybe because there's so much access today as well. So many different wrestling shows on today. Maybe that's kind of,
I don't think it's any one thing. I think it's a huge combination of many things. I think the whole social media thing has changed the business, and it's changed the business in incredibly productive ways for WWE. And, you know, they can boast about having, you know, 100 billion followers across all their talent platforms and all this kind of stuff. So in many ways it's been amazing for the business and helped it grow. But at the same time, it's just so different to how it used to be. And I remember, and I've told this story before on the podcast, I remember sitting down with Cesaro, and he was like, the thing is, back in the day, because he's quite old school, is Cesaro. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, back in the day, you'd watch Steve Austin come out on Raw, and it would be the most exciting, most exhilarating moment of the week. And then for the next 7 days, you were desperately trying to sort of work out what he might be doing. Like, I wonder what Steve Austin's doing on a Wednesday. Like, I wonder where he is in the US. I wonder, you know, where is he driving to? Who's he talking to? What's going on backstage? And you just didn't know. And then you'd have to wait a whole week to see him again. And that, I think, must make a huge difference. And I remember the Friday nights, you know, with Monday Night Raw happening on Friday nights in the UK on Sky, and just that build up to a Friday night and getting to see Stone Cold again. And there's, you know, there's really something in that. And I think, but kind of bringing this back to NXT, and one of the things I'm enjoying probably the most out of everything on the entire show is a mid-card feud, which is Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher.
Yes, great.
And Kev, you and I discussed at length their match at War Games and the sort of importance of it, and the fact that it was really different, and the fact that Ciampa did something that was so small, but it made the biggest difference, and that was, he put his entire body weight on top of Timothy Thatcher and held down his shoulders to get the three count, because he was desperate to get the three count and he was having a tough time beating him, and he wanted to ensure that Timothy Thatcher couldn't lift his shoulders from the mat. And it was so realistic. And I watched that thinking, that just felt like, in a sort of Bret Hart kind of way, that you were just in a legitimate fight. And even the Lana pin on Nia Jax on Raw, and you can't really compare the two feuds, but that pin was so snug and so tight, and it was Lana putting all her weight on Nia Jax to ensure her shoulders couldn't come up off the mat. And I loved it for that reason, because it felt desperate and it felt like she was in a fight and she needed that pinfall victory. And I just, little things like that. And then what Thatcher and Ciampa did on NXT, when they just had quite a subtle face off. Nothing really happened. They certainly didn't get physical, but this story is obviously continuing. And it's the little moments that make it more real that make the whole thing entirely more watchable.
Mm. And also, I feel like with people like Thatcher and Ciampa, there's or maybe I'm just not following the right pages or whatever, but I feel like there's slightly more mystery around them. Like, I don't feel like I know them from backstage. Like, yeah. I don't see them playing video games and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, oh God, that post, I think I posted it in our WhatsApp group that I saw the other day. Like, I know this is an AEW thing, but there's a picture of Sting and his mates playing video games, like with all the controllers in their hands, and he's in full Sting makeup and all this. And I'm like, what is it with AEW and video games? Oh my God, like, I don't want to see Sting playing video games.
Wasn't that for a music video, I think it was. Maybe.
Right, like, I would be horrified if I ever saw The Undertaker doing a music video playing video games.
It'll probably happen now.
Yeah, but it can happen now, but not in the build-up to him and Shawn Michaels. Do you know what I mean? Like, not when he's there in the company and wrestling.
Well, I don't want to see it. I think we can make an exception for Sting today because he's in the Hall of Famer. You know what I mean? He's kind of towards the end of his career. So it's a bit different, I feel, today.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I immediately, on the night he returned, and he didn't say anything. It was all very mysterious. He just walked up to everyone real close, you know, at that pay-per-view, and was sort of stared at people. And it was like, what does he want? And the commentators were going, what does he want? And I was a bit like, oh, that's, you know, that's interesting. I'm going to tune in to see why he's returned. And then the next thing I saw was him playing video games in a music video with his mates. And I'm like, okay, it doesn't really matter to me what he does now. Like, I'm not bothered.
Yeah. But it's...
So I think Thatcher and Ciampa, there's more mystery somehow.
Yeah, there is. And I think they're two sort of old school guys as well. I just... It does... You know, but also, don't bite the hand that feeds. You know, like, part of GP is talking to these guys and getting to know the real people behind the characters and hearing their stories and finding out things backstage and sitting down and having proper kind of in-depth conversations with the real people behind the superstars. So it's like, you know, I get it and I want it to continue. Yeah. And I love nothing more than sitting down and watching a documentary on the network. You know, the 24 series and all those... you know, Chronicles and all those series on the network, I absolutely love. So it's not like I want things to change, but I wonder if there's a bit of a balance. I don't know. But, you know, and also you can't sort of slag off WWE for taking advantage of different business opportunities or AEW if they're doing video game, you know, collaborations. Video games, the biggest industry on the face of the planet. It's bigger than the movie industry. I get it.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah.
But, you know, so it's just a different time. It's a different time.
Yeah. But I guess there is just a little bit of, like, I enjoy it anyway. I'm always gonna watch it, and I enjoy it anyway. I still enjoy it. But there is that thing of, you know, Karrion Kross returned at last week on NXT, and they're so mysterious. You know, Karrion Kross and Scarlett. You know that they're characters, their gimmick. And they returned, and it's all very sort of weird and interesting and dark and mysterious. And the commentators, you know, he's been away for so long. And whilst I'm watching it, I'm thinking, yeah, he has. But then instantly my next thought is, but he's been having a nice time because I've seen them two on the beach with their mates.
Yeah.
so already, like, Karrion Kross seems like a nice guy. You know, like on Instagram. So a little bit of that mystery gets taken away.
Yeah. Something I loved on NXT is this continuing storyline, these vignettes with Xia Li and Boa.
Yeah.
And this mysterious Shifu, like Chinese master character who is sort of presumably training them. It looks like torture, but in that sort of Kill Bill way, they're being seriously trained in this warehouse and there's blood on their knuckles and they're, you know, it's, to me, that could be incredibly exciting. When they come back to TV after, if this goes on a bit longer, there's something, could be really something really special there because they are amazingly well-produced vignettes.
Definitely. I think that storyline for Zaya will be such a great move for her. I feel like as a heel, she will do excellent work, and she'll actually, I think she'll prevail in that role, to be honest with you. I think she's going to do really well in that role.
But I watched the VT, and you know, the whole thing is they keep training. They have to be punching these wooden sticks and things and kicking these wooden sticks until their shins are bleeding and their knuckles are bleeding. And then they're being like Boa's being whacked across the chest and the neck and the back with a kendo stick. And you see slow motion of the stick, you know, slapping the flesh and the flesh wobbling around and the bruises and cuts that it leaves on his body. But the whole thing is they're becoming tougher and tougher, and then he gets slapped again and he gets angrier and angrier. And imagine this training and then transfer that into when they make their debut back into live in-ring action, and imagine how much fear they can put into their opponents and how much punishment they could take and then still dish it back out. And I think stuff like that really makes the talents, like it makes those two talents feel very different from anyone else on the roster. And that, to Skillet's point, I think is part of the problem here. We're not seeing many vignettes. We're seeing a lot of talents that are the same and doing the same sort of moves. And maybe you really kind of do need to build these characters up more.
I agree totally.
And also, it's interesting that there was blood in the vignette, because they shy away from blood so much.
Yeah, and very realistic as well.
Yeah, and so that's a decision they've made to have blood in the vignette. And from this is kind of it. You know what I was saying about the difference between NXT and the Raw and SmackDown shows, where, you know, Raw often is sort of a fun show, whereas NXT, they genuinely look like they're training to fight and they want to kill each other, like they're fighters. This is it in a nutshell. You get Zaya, who, let's be honest, has not been like a major character in NXT, in big storylines. That for them, it's this vignette where everything that you've just described. And we essentially had exactly the same thing on SmackDown with Otis and Gable, but it was comedy and he was blindfolded and he was throwing balls at him.
Yeah.
It's essentially the same idea. Like, I'm going to train you to, like, you know, blindfold yourself. You've got to be ready for everything. And it was like 7 hours later or whatever it is. So he's basically been taking all this pain for 7 hours, but now he's ready because he's being trained. It's the same VT, really. It's the same vignette, really.
Yeah.
But it's fun comedy. Whereas on NXT, it's like this sense of, we're training you to fight.
But then, to Skill's very valid point as well, there are no original ideas. You know, there are lots of things that are just the same thing happening across all the shows. You know, yes, they're being presented in slightly different ways, but it's the same sort of thing. Anyway, another thing,
it's
I just
exciting.
Yeah, it, that's very yeah. exciting. I think they did that super, like, to the point where it was uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah,
which is great. The Grizzled Young Veterans defeated Ever Rise and Imperium in a triple threat tag team match. So I think, does that make them? I don't know if that makes them number one contenders, but it certainly puts them in the picture for the NXT tag team titles against Lorcan and Birch. Skills, I wanted to quickly ask you about Zach Gibson, because I know you know a lot about him. We've seen him live many times. We've interviewed him. I was watching him and I was thinking, man, this was the guy that did put on an incredible show at the Royal Albert Hall, who cut incredible promos, getting serious heat from the crowd. Take your shoes off if you hate Gibson, and all those chants. Like, to me, I thought he's going to be a bit of a megastar at some point.
So did I. I felt
and
the same way.
And I just feel like that was 2 years ago and we haven't seen huge things from him yet. Do you think we will?
I think we will. I mean, you know, this tends to happen a lot. We've seen this time and time again. I mean, CM Punk is a great example. I mean, I knew how great of a promo that man was before he even signed to the WWE because of his work in Ring of Honor. And I was very excited to see him when he first joined the WWE and he was in ECW. And obviously, the fans was buzzing. You know, he had a lot of buzz, but he didn't live up to the potential that he had in his Ring of Honor days, because obviously in Ring of Honor days, he had full creative control. You know, when you know someone, you sign someone from another company, and then you know the, he, you know, Zach Gibson probably hasn't got the same reins of creative control that he once had when he was in, you know, the independent scene before he joined NXT UK. So I feel like that's what he's going through right now. He can't really say what he wants or do what he wants. He has to kind of follow a script and do. But I think as time goes on, and then, you know, they keep putting in the work as the grizzled young veterans are doing, they will be able to maybe have a bit more creative freedom, and he'll be able to shine in his element. Or just get used to the scripts and maybe turn it and manipulate the scripts in his own way and shine that way. But I don't think you could deny talent like that.
I totally agree. I think, I mean, I love him and I love James Drake. I love them as a tag team.
Well, and if they are both incredible athletes.
Yeah, they're amazing. And I think James Drake has got a bit of a young Shawn Michaels to him. You know, I know Shawn Michaels was his hero growing up. And I love the friendship between the two, you know, the genuine long-term friendship. They've come up the ranks together, you know, over here before going to the US, obviously. So, you know, I'd love to see them have a title, a tag team title reign, but just there is something about Gibson. There is something about Gibson.
Definitely.
Should we talk a bit of Smackers?
Okay.
So we're fast approaching TLC, which is obviously this Sunday, which we'll make predictions for a little bit later. But there was lots to enjoy on SmackDown last Friday night. The Sasha Banks and Carmella... I thought was really good, actually. So Sasha opted to battle Carmella in a SmackDown Women's title match there and then last Friday on SmackDown, where they were meant to have their match at TLC. And presumably they still will have a match at TLC. But this was the main event of the show. And did it end in DQ? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carmella defeated Sasha by DQ. I'm just trying
because, she wouldn't get off her for the five count.
Oh, okay.
After her guy had pulled her out the ring and interfered, Sasha got pissed off at that. You know, she's got that guy who like pours her champagne and stuff.
Oh yes, that was it. That was it. So, but what I really liked about this was the post-match beatdown, where Carmella smashed a bottle of champagne over Sasha's back. I kind of feel like a bit of fake blood was a bit necessary. If you smash a glass bottle on somebody's back, it's likely to you know, pierce the skin a little bit. But anyway, I thought it was horribly aggressive and... in a good way. And I thought Carmella was great. I loved the way she sprayed the champagne over everyone, like over the commentators and over Sasha and over the ref. It just had that nice sort of chaotic feel. And it was brutal enough to really get me interested in this one.
I really enjoyed it as well, actually. I'm kind of into this. I didn't expect to be as into it as much as I am, but I was slightly concerned that, you know, just about Carmella's sort of return with this new gimmick, and it's slightly sort of the same. Look at me, I look prettier than you. Look at my blonde hair, and I'm a bit mean girls. Sort of the same as Lana's gimmick before Lana became really babyface-ish.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm classier than you. I'm better than you. I'm pretty. All of that. So slightly concerned about that, but. She's doing a good job. Like, she's talented, and yeah, I'm interested in this match.
What about you, Skills?
I haven't been up to date with wrestling like the both of you have this year, but I feel like I hear a lot of good stuff Sasha's been doing throughout the year. Mm-hmm. I know I missed the whole when Sasha and Bayley were both won the tag titles back in the middle of the summer. I missed all that stuff, but I've been hearing a lot of good things about Sasha and Bayley. I've been hearing about both good things about both of them. So I feel like, yeah, they're just really in the element right now. I think Sasha she's just doing phenomenal work.
Skills, does it not really stress you out not being across every single aspect of WWE? Because if I haven't watched a show, like the following morning when it's after, you know, after the night that it's been on, I get really stressed out and I think, oh God, I'm not caught up enough. And I need to tweet about it. And like the fact that you missed most of the golden role model stuff kind of infuriates me.
It doesn't stress me out because, you know, I've seen it all before. This is nothing new. You know, I think they've kind of incorporated a little bit of Hollywood blondes into their storyline this year. You know, it's I've seen it.
Ah, so when you say you haven't been watching, you have been listening to GP though, because you clearly hear me talk about the Hollywood blonde.
100%.
Yeah, good boy.
You guys are updating me. You're helping me out. So,
but you know what? To that point, and just sort of speaking as fans and being the voice of all the fans that listen to this show, something I'm seeing on Twitter so much, which in a way is a real positive and it's really nice to hear, but at the same time it's quite depressing. So many people on our Twitter feed are saying thanks so much for GP, you're the reason I can kind of keep up to date with WWE because I can't be bothered to watch the shows at the moment. And you know, while I love that people are listening to us to get their weekly roundup of everything going on, it's sad to think that all these people are tuning out of WWE programming.
You provide a service, James. You provide a service, baby.
Well, I want more people to watch. I want things to get better. I want AEW to grow, and I want them to really put a rocket up Vince's ass. Because so much stuff could be so much better. I think that's my biggest frustration. It's like, we know how good the talents are. We know how amazing the production values are. We know all the wonderful things about WWE, but just, I would say 80% of programming could be a lot more exciting.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it will. It will. You know, it just, the times that we're in now is definitely not helping. That's what it is. I don't want to blame every. And like I said, it's not all WWE. It's not just WWE. I've just kind of taken a little break from the wrestling industry in general, because I just think in general the whole scene's a bit of a mistake. But yeah.
Well, I'm glad we got you back on this week's show.
I do have a question for you guys though, because I won't, unfortunately, be staying throughout the duration of this podcast. I do have to continue doing some work, but I have a random question. Skillet's random question. And it's about the Royal Rumble in 2020. Earlier this year, Royal Rumble. If you don't mind me actually going to the segue, by the way, James, before I continue.
No, of course. Go for it.
All right. So in the Royal Rumble match, Brock Lesnar had a great showing. He was probably arguably his best performance in the wrestling ring, as people would say. But can you guys tell me how many people he eliminated this year and who did he eliminate in chronological order?
Oh, my God.
Do you know what? I'm not going to lie. When you started that question, I went to Google and I typed in Brock Lesnar E, and I was going to type in Brock Lesnar eliminations from Royal Rumble. But the first thing that came up in Google was Brock Lesnar's email address. It's just brock.lesnar1. brock.lesnar1@gmail.com.
Oh, perfect.
So
Thank you. Send
him a message. Skills, that's such a tough question.
I know, it's not fair, is it? It's not fair. Okay, I guess we can evaluate that for the next episode. How about that?
I mean, I know he eliminated Keith Lee.
Yes. Okay, forget order. Just say names then. Forget chronological. Chronological order is too hard. So yeah, you can just say names. Just throw names at me.
Okay. I think Braun Strowman.
Yep, Strowman, yes.
Who did you say, Kev?
Ziggler?
Nope.
Big E?
Big E, yes.
Cesaro?
Yes.
Robert Roode, Eric Rowan, John Morrison, Kofi Kingston, Shinsuke Nakamura, Shelton Benjamin, Elias, and MVP.
13, that is right. Yeah, obviously Google did not help you at all answering that question.
No, it wasn't on Google. That was all just from the top of my head.
Well done, James. And Kev, I'm sorry, man. I thought you'd do better than that, Kev. Come on.
surely going to throw him Ziggler.
That was a good guess. That was a good guess,
Ziggler,
because we always get to them.
That was a safe bet. So, Skills, you've waited until we were recording to drop the bombshell that you're going to leave early.
I am so sorry. I do apologize.
Does that mean you're going now?
But to be honest, this might actually save the show, because you can tell I wasn't talking much because I haven't watched wrestling in a while.
Yeah, but so, you still make valid points, Skills.
Yeah. Very much. And listen, let's do something in the New Year podcast, and I'll make sure I'm up to date then.
So you're just to be perfectly clear, are you going now?
I'm going to go in the next 5 minutes.
Right. I mean, should we just say goodbye now? Just so we're not sort of interrupting. Yeah, good. Right. I can't believe we future endeavored Ash, and then you've done this to us. Good Lord.
Hey, man, you never know what you're going to get with the skinned man. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I love you both. Have a lovely Christmas and a happy new year. And let's do this again.
Yeah, let's do this again, Skills. Happy Christmas, mate. We love you.
Love you guys. Take care.
Bye. Absolute state of it.
I mean
God love him, he's one of my favorite people in the world. Anyone that doesn't like Skillet is wrong, frankly. He brings a beautiful chaos to this show, and I wish he was on the show more often. But there he goes, off into the sunset, seeing out 2020 by just heading back to work, leaving GP early in a classic Skills way. So, Kev, just last couple of things I want to talk about on Smackers before we get to the title picture, which is obviously excellent. Big E, Sami Zayn, they have an Intercontinental Championship match. Was it a title match? I don't know if it was a title match. No, it was a non-title showdown, wasn't it?
I think it was. Hang on, I've written notes. Where is it? I think it was one of those where it was like, if he wins, he might get a title shot. Yeah, because I've written down, James will hate this stipulation here.
Yeah, if you can beat the champion, you're not the champion, but you get a title shot at the champion. Yeah. But I like
Sammy's shirt.
And you like it, do you?
Yeah.
WWE have done some dodgy merchandise this week. They're terrible 2020 t-shirts. I don't know if you saw them.
No.
Not good. Not good. But I really enjoyed this match. I mean, obviously, we talk every week about how great Sammy is. Big E, something really special going on with him. So Zayn defeated Big E by count out because it was a bit of a game of cat and mouse. And I think, didn't Sammy go underneath the ring and then Big E chased him? And then Zayn came out the other side and got back into the ring before Big E managed the 10 count. So I didn't mind it. I thought this all adds layers to Sammy's character, and I think he's doing really great stuff on SmackDown. But the big thing I wanted to talk about, I don't know if you've seen the clip. I tweeted about it. But Big E on Talking Smack with Paul Heyman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that clip. Yeah, I never watched Talking Smack, but I've seen that clip.
It was just, it really excited me because I think if someone like Paul Heyman is bothering to do this sort of kind of promo in a way with Big E on Talking Smack and make a thing about how talented he is and that he needs to get more serious and make people take notice because he's future championship material. And he was like, I want fans to completely forget about the New Day. Like when people look at Roman Reigns, when was the last time anyone even bothered mentioning the Shield? And
that was the best.
So true.
Yeah. Like I hadn't even thought about that. But he's so right. He's so right. Like now look at Roman. Like you don't even think of the Shield.
That's the thing. Like you look at Roman and I sort of forget it was in the Shield. I mean, I don't. That's daft. But it's certainly not something you think about when you look at him anymore.
No, and I loved the Shield.
Yeah.
I was a massive fan of the Shield, but you don't think of it now. Like Roman is just such a Roman now is bigger than the Shield.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I think Big E can do this now. He's free of the New Day. As much as I love the New Day, I think it was time. And I think I just and the serious look that Big E gave Paul was exciting. If by any chance this is a sort of the very first stages of building up a story between Big E and Roman, I could not be more all in for that. Like, that to me is so exciting. And just there's a built-in storyline there. There's something to grasp onto straight away. It's like we both came from factions. We both made our name being propped up by two other people.
But I love how it's slowly sort of developing, because there was the other one on Talking Smack where Miz was saying a similar thing to him, and he responded by saying, why should I get serious? Like, why should... Like, this is me. I'm not going to, oh, what? Because I'm on my own now and I'm doing singles. Now I've got to, like, turn heel and be all serious and turn on my friends. And, like, that's not the way it is. And that was great as well. But then, and now Paul Heyman said this, and you're right, the little look from Big E, there's a slow, and it doesn't even mean that he, like, necessarily has to turn heel or anything, but there's a slow realization happening within Big E that, you know, he's got it in him to be a big single star, and maybe, you know, he is starting to get more serious about that.
Yeah. It's very, very exciting. I was pumped up by that. Just the idea of Big E in a title picture against Roman. Very exciting indeed.
You're listening to the number one WWE podcast. It's Gorilla Position.
And talking to Roman, let's talk about the main event scene on SmackDown. So I love Jey Uso and Roman. I love that they started off the show backstage and you sort of saw Jey with Roman again. Roman obviously beat down Jey with a chair viciously the week before, but Jey just sort of knew that was part of it. That was part of the punishment. He knew he'd stepped out of line and he was punished for it. And I like that, because we were saying last week, it's not like they're going to break up now. It's just part of it. And it's this abusive relationship. And Jey will be back by his side the following week. And he was. And I loved that.
Yeah. It's the way Roman said to him, like, as they were stood next to each other looking at the screen, Roman said to him, like, Jey was like, you good? Roman said, yeah, I'm great. How are you? Your family good?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. It's like, just that comment, your family good? Like, he's just beaten the hell out of him last week.
Yeah.
So, it is an abusive relationship. That's the story they're playing.
It's so good. Go on.
No, I just said it's clever.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's clever and it's layered, which is what we need to see more of across the board. Kevin Owens cuts a promo and he was talking about his friends, the steel chairs and the ladders and the tables that he's going to use in his match, in the TLC match against Roman on Sunday night. And then Jey came out, and because I think sort of Roman had given Jey the nod backstage to say, go and sort him out. And then Jey went to try and take down KO in the ring. And then did KO, I think, did he put Jey through a table, right? Powerbombed him through a table.
Yeah, because Jey came down to the ring to attack KO while he was addressing Roman Reigns in the ring.
Yeah,
and then KO sort of turned it around and beat the hell out of him and was trying to tell Roman to come down to the ring, because Jey is just like collateral caught in the crossfire.
Yeah,
it's like whoever's in the ring saying their piece, trying to get a point over, they're gonna end up beating up Jey. Like, he just gets beaten up from both of them.
Yeah.
And then Roman came down to the ring, but then Heyman was saying, no, you're doing this on his terms. This, we do things on your terms. Remember, it's always on your terms. And then he slowly sort of turned away. And Owens was begging him to get in the ring. But then Roman's took the power back by turning his back and walking away.
This was so good on so many levels. Like, I love during the beatdown with Jey, KO tweaked his knee I think so. He's potentially going to have a dodgy leg going into Sunday's match, and obviously the rules are you have to climb the ladder to get the title. So I like that. That's potentially going to play into the story of the match. But just that moment you're talking about, where again, and so much of the Roman Paul Heyman Jey Uso stuff hasn't been done with microphones. Like there was no mic there. It was the big dog coming down with the title over his shoulder, and he wanted to get in the ring with KO, and just Heyman go, no, on your own terms, just come on, you are the champion. This, you do things when you want to do them. Like it was so realistic, and it wasn't over the top. It wasn't like, I'm begging you, don't go down there. Don't go down there. It was just like the little soft voice in his ear. And the fact that was enough to make Roman think, yeah, no, you're right, actually. You're right. And then he goes backstage. And then KO obviously follows him and says, well, I'm going to come to you then. And then backstage, we get Roman beating down KO viciously, throwing him into the side of a dumpster, kicking him in the head, smashing him around the face with fists and forearms, and then does a message down the barrel of the lens to KO's family. And just horrible, absolutely horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was awesome. It was the whole thing was awesome. And we're not seeing much of that from Heyman, like loads of like him sort of telling Roman what to do, you know, Heyman was very vocal around Lesnar.
Yeah.
But Roman's very much in charge, but we just had that moment where Heyman had to remind him. Because maybe Owen's just got under his skin a little bit, and he just had to remind him, no, on your terms, you know, on your terms, not on his. Like, I like it. It's very real. It's very real.
And I love his, you know, his message to Karina, KO's wife, and his kids.
Yeah.
But saying that, you know, I just remember, I put food on your table.
Yeah.
Him supporting you is all down to me.
Yeah.
I am the head of the table. Like you need to remind your husband of that. Kids, you need to remind daddy of that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, so sinister.
And it's so sinister. And then he gives KO one last smash around the head. And then with a smile on his face, just says, have a good night into the camera and then walks off. And it's just, what a nasty bastard in the best possible way.
Yeah, he's a genius. Like Roman is so good, like, and he's making me really hate him. I really want to see him get beaten up. You know, as a fan, I want to see him get beaten up. Like he's making me hate him.
Yeah,
which is his job. Like he's the number one heel. It's sort of like I feel about Roman how I felt when I was like sort of in school and that, you know, that era where that we're watching Raw on a Friday night or whatever when. You had like The Rock and Mick Foley and all them, but Triple H was the champion. I used to just, when Triple H like won the title again, I was I just felt like, you know, like when Triple H would win the title off of The Rock or something, I'd be like, no, or off of Mick Foley. Like you'd hate him, Triple H at the time. And I feel that at Roman Reigns now, which, you know, to Skills' point and for everything that we've been talking about is not, you know, it's quite rare to feel that way towards someone because there's so much access and because we know what's going on and we know everyone backstage and do you know what I mean? Like, but to still feel that, like when he comes on, like I desperately on Sunday, I want to see KO beat him up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a great storyline and just elevated KO. Not that he needed elevating much because he's obviously one of the biggest stars in the company, but I feel like he hasn't been this exciting and he hasn't felt this important in a long, long time. Just anyone getting that Roman rub at the moment. And it's like, I love the way, just going back to NXT very quickly. I love that Finn is saying, you know, which one of you guys is going to get the Finn rub?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't care. I really don't care. That's not my job. William Regal needs to sort that out. But you know, who's going to get the Finn rub? And I feel like it's the same on SmackDown. Anyone that's working with Roman right now is elevated because of how good Roman and Heyman and Jey Uso are.
Yeah, so good.
So good. And the SmackDown ratings are looking good, and I think it's testament to the stories being strong and them telling good sort of episodic storylines, and there being good cliffhangers. And yeah, so SmackDown is beating Raw in the ratings, and in fact, right. AEW is, it's not beating Raw in the ratings. However, this week it's got lower viewership overall, about 500,000 lower than Raw. However, more people in the 18 to 49 demo watched AEW than they did Monday Night Raw.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. That gap, yeah, that gap seems to be closing. And, you know, that audience, like we talk about what, you know, WWE was back in the day and the Attitude Era and all that stuff, that was the target demo, the sort of, you know, the college demo, if you like, the older males. And more of them, it seems, are watching AEW right now.
Yeah, then it just comes down to, like, AEW is slightly more Attitude Era ish.
Yes.
Like, not completely, but it's more in that direction.
Yeah.
SmackDown is great stories and, you know, Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Everything that's happening there. I suppose, yeah, Raw, it just, we've talked about it before, haven't we? It's just the story in general, because they've got some great talent. It's just what's happening with story. Now, granted, I haven't seen the end of this, of Raw this week yet, but, you know, there isn't quite that same level of stuff going on Raw. There's a lot of fun. I was saying last week, there's a lot of fun and there's a lot of matches. But, you know, what's the big thing that's happened? I suppose Bray Wyatt, we said, is, you know, that's the big thing.
But even,
that's over on.
But even so, there were missteps this week. Like, I mean, right. we'll talk about Raw in a minute, but the just the matches from SmackDown side of things that are happening this Sunday at the TLC pay-per-view. So we've got Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship in a tables, ladders and chairs match. Who have you got? What's your prediction, big man?
Roman versus KO?
Yeah.
Well, Roman's going to win, 100%.
Yeah, I mean...
That's a question.
Yeah, absolutely he is. But the thing is, even though it's hugely predictable, because we know what a role Roman is on, and all roads now lead to WrestleMania. But even with the result being that predictable, like it was versus Jey Uso, I still cannot wait for this match.
Yeah, because you want to watch it. Roman is and KO, but right now it's Roman Reigns' moment, and he's incredible. Like every time he comes on screen, you immediately take note.
Yeah.
You're invested in whatever is happening. Like, he's so charismatic.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, he's a nasty bastard and there's so much story and you just believe that he is that. He is everything that he says he is, the head of the table. Like, he is. Like, you know, you can get some people saying, like, a lot of people's gimmick is I'm the best. You know, and a lot of them are brilliant, but he really is the man, isn't he? He is the number one superstar in WWE.
Yeah, he is 100%. The only other match from the SmackDown side, as it stands at the moment, and we assume this is going to happen, obviously they had their match on Friday night, but presumably this Friday they'll make it official for Sunday, is the SmackDown Women's Championship match, the champ Sasha Banks putting the title on the line against Carmella. Who have you got?
Sasha Banks, I think, feels too early to take the title off her, I think.
Yes, I think you're right. I might go Carmella.
It's not a certain Roman, but...
I might go Carmella, just because I think maybe she needs it more. And I think if you really want to add a bit of spice onto everything that Carmella is doing right now, if they've got high hopes for this sort of, you know, new version of her character, then why not? You know, I don't think a loss would matter to Sasha Banks right now. And yes, she hasn't had the title for long. She's had it for a couple of months. But I think they might put it on Carmella.
Okay.
We'll see. Okay. Well, let's talk about Raw. And again, I think this is another problem. The fact that you haven't fully caught up on Raw, and I know you've been a little bit busier this week, but sort of testament to just how much content there is to try and get through on a weekly basis. There was lots of good stuff on Raw. It opened with The Miz and Morrison doing the Nightmare Before... Oh, no, what was it? Nightmare Before TLC. Which was actually a very well written version of A Night Before Christmas, but with lots of gags in there about the upcoming pay per view and building up Drew versus AJ for the championship in the TLC match. And I did like this. I really did.
I did.
And I laughed at some of the lines, and I thought Miz did a tremendous job. I don't know if John Morrison doing the Braveheart shtick for Drew, like that's a 25-year-old reference, isn't it?
I mean, it is. It's still a really famous film, I suppose. And he has got a sword and stuff.
Yeah, I guess Drew is doing the Braveheart gimmick himself.
Yeah. So I found it quite funny.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was all right. But what I particularly liked about it was that by the end of the segment, because we had Sheamus come out and he was like, yeah, that was quite entertaining in fairness. But tonight, AJ, I'm going to beat you up. And then it turned into the AJ Sheamus match. And what I liked about it is that by the end of that match, and therefore by the end of this sort of whole segment on the show, it got serious. You know, and AJ caught Sheamus's boot up in the ropes. So Sheamus was hanging upside down outside the ring. Mm. And then AJ just walloped him with really stiff chair shots to the chest and to his arms and to his leg. And it just looked so painful. And it was just quite nasty. And before a pay-per-view like TLC, where AJ's going into a title match, you want to see that side of him. So I'm glad it got there by the end.
Yeah. Yeah, AJ's great. Like, and we all know how talented AJ is, but I think just as a character and on the mic, he's actually improved in the last, I don't know, year or so. There's something about AJ, like we've said it before, like the role he was playing with Survivor Series, he sort of got this ability to be the idiot. Like I found it really funny. The funniest moment for me was right near the beginning of that Nightmare Before TLC thing when Miz was reading and then he... For that, whatever character or line that he said, you know, a character he was introducing, he clicked his fingers and the light turned on AJ Styles, who was prepared in the corner of the ring, who we hadn't seen yet. We didn't know anyone else was there. We thought it was just Miz in the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
And you just thought, oh, he's been stood there the whole time waiting for his cue, like waiting for his light. And he had this stupid look on his face and he was really into it. He was like really into Miz's stupid story. And just like, he's an idiot. And in a really sort of, funny way. Like, I like what he's doing. But then he also has that ability, like you say, to suddenly turn serious. Because he had that spat with Sheamus, and he said something like, do you want to be part of the solution or part of the problem? And Sheamus went, I think I prefer being part of the problem.
Yeah.
And then by the end, which, you know, is sort of classic Sheamus. And then by the end of it, he's upside down, smacking him with chairs. And then he shouted at him just before he went off, you still want to be part of the problem?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool, and I certainly prefer serious AJ. I think, you know, there's always room for comedy in WWE, of course, when it's done well. Yeah. And I think Miz and Morrison can do it very well sometimes if the script is good. And this was a good script, but I think it was good. And then to finish off the show, we had AJ. It was like, I can't remember what they called it, a title. Elevation, the championship ascension ceremony, which is essentially where they put the title on the brass ring and it gets taken up to the ceiling and they cut a promo on each other, and it ended in physicality, and AJ elbowed Drew through a table, essentially standing tall. He climbed up the ladder, took the title. So to me, that means that Drew is obviously retaining on Sunday. I think we can both predict that. But I thought it was good. I'm very much looking forward to the match. I'm intrigued to see how they're going to do a different type of TLC to Roman and KO.
Yeah.
It's just, is that kind of classic Hell in a Cell issue where you have various matches of the same stipulation on the same event? How do you make each one different? So I'll be interested to see how they do that. But yeah, I'm excited by this match, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would imagine Drew is going to win. I think it'd be odd if, you know, after the whole journey we've gone on with Drew,
yeah,
you know, and against Randy and all of that, it would be strange if he just dropped the belt to AJ now.
Yes, I can't see that happening. Lana defeated Nia Jax.
Okay.
Have you not got to this part yet?
No, I haven't got that. I'm watching New Day and Jeff Hardy against Hurt Business, and that's where I'm up to.
Okay. So this is an interesting one, and I think they're just wanting to build sympathy for Lana, and they're really trying to make her into a big baby face. But she miraculously got this big victory over Nia Jax. She rolled her up super tight, put all her weight on her. Like I was talking, it's an odd comparison to make, but I compared it to the old Tommaso Ciampa, Timothy Thatcher finish. But Lana got all her weight on Nia Jax, legs over her shoulders, no way she could get out, and she got the three count. But then after the match, Nia and Shayna Baszler completely destroyed Lana to the point where now she's gone to hospital and won't be making the TLC tag team title match, teaming up with Asuka against Nia and Shayna. So that's the story. And I, from what I understand, it's complete storyline injury. So I don't know if Lana, if they're playing up the fact that she won't make it to the pay-per-view and then she miraculously does, and that's a way of kind of her coming in a heroic way and possibly winning the titles with Asuka. I don't know if that's the plan, but the question mark now is who is going to fill in for Lana at the pay-per-view. But it's odd, and the reason I think they're just doing it so she can make a heroic return is because this whole thing has been building Lana, you know, so it would be a bit weird just to throw in a Dana Brooke as a replacement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it, but it does feel like they're building Asuka and Lana as sort of a potential tag team, like tag team champions.
Yeah, it does. Which, on the face of it, annoys me because I think, well, Asuka is your Raw Women's Champion, and she's not defending that title. Why is she even bothered about the tag titles? But there was a segment backstage on Raw when Asuka was saying, "I'm really proud of you. Go out there, you can do it. You can beat Nia Jax." She was saying that to Lana. So there's this sort of, they are building up the friendship on TV. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mace defeated Ricochet.
Okay.
And afterwards, all of Retribution just held up, sort of kind of held Ricochet whilst Ali screamed in his face saying, "This isn't over until I say it's over. It's not over until you join Retribution." And all I'm thinking is, please let it be over.
I saw your tweet.
Just come on.
I just like, it's gone from them wanting to destroy the ring and the set and the very sort of fabric of WWE to trying to convince Ricochet to join their group, and he doesn't want to.
I mean, when you put it like that.
He doesn't want to join your group.
No.
He didn't want to join the Hurt Business, and he doesn't want to join... If he doesn't want to join Hurt Business, he certainly doesn't want to join Retribution.
Yes, just stop wasting your time, Ali.
Why are you so bothered?
Just let it go. Let it go, mate.
I thought you just wanted to bring down the whole of WWE. Why are you so bothered about trying to convince Ricochet to play?
Can you imagine? can you imagine when they're having their round table meetings? You know, and they've got the whiteboard up on the table. And he's got his marker pen. He's kind of drawing his action plan and kind of writing out their mission statements. Like, we will destroy the very fabric of this company. And plan B, let's try and recruit Ricochet because, you know, I mean, like, it's laughable. The whole thing is laughable.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen with this, or whether it's going to continue. Or
but the thing is, the crucial thing is here. Do you care?
Not really. Only to the point where, like, I care about the talents because I think they're all wicked and I want something good for them.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, is not this.
No.
Like, I love Mustafa Ali and Dijakovic. Like, they're great, but I feel like they could do more.
but as we said, you made a great point on the show about a month ago. It's like Ali was literally replaced by Kofi Kingston, and then Kofi Mania happened, and he won the world title in the biggest moment of his career at WrestleMania in front of 80,000 people in New York. That is the story.
Yeah, go after Kofi.
Like, that is it.
Destroy the New Day, and everybody loves the New Day, and it would be massive heels to just destroy them.
Yeah,
but I don't know, like. Why are they bothered about whether Ricochet wants to be in the group or not? It doesn't matter. I know.
It's so daft. The other thing I don't know if you've got to this on Raw yet, but John Morrison and The Miz defeating Keith Lee in a 2-on-1 handicap match. Have you watched this yet?
No, I haven't got to that yet, no.
Good. This is going well. First skills and then you.
Yeah.
Thank God this is the last show of the year, eh? But I'm going to say it. I'm really worried about Keith Lee.
Okay.
There is some... Watch this match and text me and let me know what you think. Because... And I have to say, and I wish people would listen to me, I said this about 2 months ago. I said there's something not right about Keith Lee. He was in a match on Raw. I forget who his opponent was, but he looked different. He looked unsure of himself. His moves weren't quite up to the standard we would see in NXT. It felt like he had some new voices, some backstage voices, you know, on the Raw side of things in his head, telling him different things about his style, what he should be doing in the ring, what he shouldn't be doing in the ring, how he should perform as a big man on Raw compared to how he was performing, you know, physically in his in-ring style on NXT. And I just felt like he looked a bit lost. I remember saying at the time his big victory over Randy Orton, for some reason, didn't feel as big as it should have done. It felt like a rushed victory for the sake of it, and not a victory that actually made him feel like a star. Actually, what happened was that for the next few months, all we could talk about was Randy Orton, because he was in a title picture with Drew McIntyre. And then there's been a lot of reports this week that he's been sent back to the performance center to make tweaks and improve on his in-ring work as per the orders of Vince McMahon. I have a feeling Vince is not a fan of him. I think some of the things he's been doing on Raw in recent weeks have looked a little bit sloppy. And then he's just had this like a clean loss to John Morrison and The Miz. And no disrespect to John Morrison and The Miz, but Keith Lee should, based on his victory over Randy Orton and what he did in NXT, he should be wiping the floor with Miz and Morrison.
Strowman beat them.
Say again?
Well, Strowman beat them in a handicap match a couple of months ago, didn't he?
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I have a really bad feeling that things aren't going well for Keith Lee.
Oh, that's a real shame.
But have a watch of it. Let me know what you think. But I remember flagging it months ago, and I was thinking this is one of those transfers from NXT to the main roster that is not working. They changed his music. They tweaked his music. They've tweaked his in-ring style. There was one performance at the Survivor Series last year. Do you remember him? And it was, I think, just him and Roman left.
Yeah.
And he didn't win. He didn't beat Roman, but he came out of that looking like a superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Roman sold for him, and Roman just looked incredible when he took the powerbomb from him. The crowd were going mental for him. He came out of that looking like a genuine superstar. Compare that to a year later, something has gone desperately wrong.
Well, look at the feud between him and Dijakovic in NXT. Yeah. Like, awesome. But now, look at the two of them now.
Yeah.
Funny how things change.
Well, it is. And it's funny, you know, you go back to 2015 and you look at the crop of stars that came from NXT at that time. Think about the four horsewomen. You know, you've got Charlotte and Becky and Sasha and Bayley, and they are treated like genuine WWE superstars. They are, you know, poster figures for the company. They're a huge part of the fabric of WWE. But they came in at a different time. They were bought in by Stephanie McMahon. And I just feel like the current crop of NXT stars that are making that transition over to the main roster brands, it's not going well. And I don't know why. I don't know if just Vince really doesn't rate NXT anymore. I mean, this is obviously just opinions, but if NXT is losing the ratings to AEW, maybe Vince is done with NXT. Maybe he's just like, he's not bothered by it at all. Maybe he doesn't rate any of the stars because they couldn't beat a startup company. I don't know. But something's gone awry, and it's a massive shame.
Yeah. It just needs a big storyline with someone. A gritty, big storyline.
Yeah, and also, but his promos, you know, he'll come out there and there'll be elements of what we saw in NXT, but just done in a really sort of hammed up way. If he comes out and kicks off a promo by going, "I am the limitless one," it's like, what? You're not going to take that seriously. And it's like Riddle's another prime example. And yes, he beat MVP far too quickly on Raw, by the way. It was like a 1 minute match. And MVP just gets defeated really easily. But Riddle, they are just flogging a dead horse with the bro stuff. And he's just, I don't know if you've seen the backstage segments on Raw, but he's there was more bro puns.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, you know, and again, it's like it's taking that little element of what he had on NXT, turning it up to 11 and sort of ruining it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's lots of, like, I know you're halfway through the show and I know I've ruined it, a lot of it for you.
No, that's not that.
But there's just a lot of problems with the show. Have you seen the Fiend promo?
No.
Excellent. No, it's fine. So the Fiend comes out and he cuts a promo on Randy Orton. Bray Wyatt comes out and cuts a promo on Randy Orton. And it was good. And you look at Bray, and I want you to watch this promo and just kind of take in how good he is. Like, his mannerisms, the way he delivers his lines, he's really, really good. And then Randy appears on the Titantron and says, Let's play a game of hide and seek. If you like games so much, let's play hide and seek. So Bray walks up the ramp, and then you get a few moments of him backstage, and, you know, he runs into R-Truth and has a sort of comedy exchange with him. And I think Bray has an exchange with Matt Riddle as well. And, you know, there's some more bro puns. But then he carries on walking around backstage looking for Randy, and he looks through a door and he sees this armchair, wooden rocking chair, the old Bray Wyatt rocking chair in a dark room. So he goes in there, he sits in the chair, and then Randy attacks him from behind. And then he throws him into a big wooden box, closes it, covers it in petrol, and sets the box alight. And then the Fiend pops out of the box on fire and puts the mandible claw on Randy backstage and sort of destroys Randy backstage. And it's visually very impressive, nicely done. I put on Twitter last night, I said I was disappointed by the Orton versus Wyatt follow-up this week. Bray's in-ring promo was ace, but Randy conveniently finding a big box to lock him in, plus a petrol can, plus a lighter, was laughable. Not thinking about the small things ruins the big creatives. And actually, since putting that tweet out, I've realized, and people corrected me saying, well, it was a setup by Randy Orton, so that stuff was there because he, you know, he put the chair there to entice Bray in, and then he attacked him and then threw him in the box and then set it alight. So it was a setup. So I was kind of wrong for saying that. However, we've gone from the lovely subtleties of Randy saying, I know what your weakness is. Your weakness is Alexa Bliss. And the subtle moment of the Fiend coming out and Randy handing Alexa back to Bray, we've gone from that to him trying to burn him alive. So it's like, I slagged it off on Twitter, but probably for the wrong reason. The actual reason that this is frustrating is that it's like you've jumped 3 months ahead in 1 week.
Yeah.
It's all too much, all too soon. And I think this is the second week we haven't seen Alexa. And actually already she's been sorely missed.
Yeah. I wonder if like with these kind of stunts, you know, the fire and the whatever, like it's a sort of, what can we do to pop a rating? Like, what can we do to get a reaction on social media, you know, or whatever? Whereas maybe if they just, like you said that SmackDown's ratings are going up, that's literally down to the story. Like if they just concentrated on the story, like, and just gave it time, maybe it's slightly in like desperation phase of what's the craziest thing we can do to get everyone talking. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And WWE has a big track record of this. You know, we saw Vince McMahon die in the limo explosion. We saw Vince McMahon get crushed to death when the set fell on top of him during the $1 million giveaway. They do, you know, they bring back the McMahons when they need a rating. They did Raw Underground, which was a colossal waste of time to pop a rating. They do it all the time. But SmackDown is proving, as you say, that if you tell good stories, people will come. Like, everyone talks about, well, content is consumed in a different way now. And, you know, people watch things on demand and people watch clips on YouTube and they catch up via social media and that sort of thing. And I know that's true. I know that it's important for WWE to create these big social moments and things that can be, you know, turned into memes and GIFs that are spread around like wildfire, excuse the pun. However, the truth is, if you create something good and tell a good story, people will still want to watch it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you consume your content in a different way. If Netflix put out a really great murder mystery series or a great drama series or a great comedy, if it's got good characters and if it's well written and if it's believable and you can buy into it, people will watch it.
Yeah.
And it's no different here. And it's like the ratings are down the toilet because WWE aren't doing a good enough job, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate being negative, especially with you, because I know you take it personally.
What are you saying this about WWE?
But, you know, it's depressing because I know how great it can be. And I know how exciting it should be. And I just think when you throw things, I mean, you said it yourself, you sort of throw enough, you know what, at the wall and you see what sticks. But, you know, what you want is character driven stories and feuds. And the fact that I can watch 2 hours of NXT and the thing to stick out the most is a bit of a stare down between Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher based on a really believable wrestling match they had and a pinfall that was the most believable pinfall I've seen in years and almost makes all other pinfall victories look silly. You know, it's like, I think that's really telling.
Sometimes it's just storytelling, and it's in-ring storytelling as well, and that is the stuff that grips you. Like even Sami Zayn, for example, like, you know, that he's bit by bit carving out this sort of, it's, you know, it's slow and it's week by week, but he's carving out this sort of, he keeps winning by count out, you know, he keeps sort of just being weaselly, and they suddenly called him this week the master strategist. And you know, and this week was like he went under the ring and that's becoming his thing. And it's, you know, it's becoming his thing rather than right, what can we do to get people interested in these two? We need to set something on fire. He needs to jump off a cage. He needs to moonsault it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just a developing story that's starting to happen. And the Roman Reigns one is the biggest example. It's just Roman Reigns doesn't sort of really need to do anything special effects-y.
Yeah,
you know, it's just a story, and it's a compelling story.
Yeah, And it's just, and the thing that you always talk about is the believability. Stuff can be a bit wacky and stupid. And, you know, we've obviously seen so much wacky over the top nonsense in wrestling over the years, but it's, if they believe it, you know, and I just, when you were talking, I was thinking about watching you like at the finals at Strictly. And I remember there have been times when I've been stood with Katie watching you on the dance floor, and I've got quite emotional watching you because of your face. And what you're putting into the performance and the story, and you know, you only get what, 90 seconds or 2 minutes to tell a story during a dance, but you make it believable because of the performance you're putting in. And I don't know. It's, and there, obviously there are a lot of, it's easy to make comparisons between wrestling and dance because it's the same sort of thing. But anyway, lots of issues with Raw, but there's lots to be excited about as well. I think TLC is going to be a good show. Let's just very quickly, before we wrap things up, make predictions. So we've got Drew McIntyre versus AJ Styles for the WWE Championship in a TLC match. Who have you got? Drew?
Yeah.
Lovely. We've got The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, with Alexa Bliss, I hope, versus Randy Orton. Who have you got for this one?
Is it definitely The Fiend?
It's definitely The Fiend, yeah.
Then I think the Alexa is the cat amongst the pigeons, isn't she? Because I would say you can't have The Fiend just lose now. Not, but if they're going to play something with Alexa to under The Fiend's skin, do you know what I mean? If Randy's going to play these mind games and it goes a bit further, then it could happen like that. Because it's weird if it's just to sort of dive in this feud, then it's done before the Rumble. Randy's lost again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Randy, but something to do with Alexa.
Okay, I'm gonna go with The Fiend. I quite like your idea, and I think that might be more likely. But I'm gonna go with The Fiend just to be different.
Okay.
Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler putting the tag team, the women's tag team titles on the line versus Asuka and to be determined. But let's assume that they'll make an announcement during the kickoff show, but then Lana will end up coming out during the match. Who have you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with that idea and that Asuka and Lana will win.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I sort of don't see how they could lose really at this point. Although they have been winning matches against Nia and Shayna for the last month, and Lana's beat Nia Jax clean and Shayna Baszler clean last week, I believe it was. So maybe it is that Nia and Shayna retain. But I think for the feel-good factor, the moment that WWE are probably going for, yeah, I'm going to say Asuka and Lana.
Yeah.
And then the last match that we haven't talked about, New Day, Kofi and Xavier Woods, obviously, putting the titles on the line, Raw tag team titles against Hurt Business, Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin.
I'm going to go Hurt Business.
I think it really needs to be.
Yeah.
I think it really needs to be. And I was so disappointed and angered that MVP would lose. I mean, I don't think MVP should be in the ring. I really don't think he should be wrestling anymore. I think his place is on the mic making careers out of these young talents.
Yeah.
Like that's what he's good at. And I just don't think he should be wrestling much anymore. And I was so annoyed that he lost so quickly to Riddle. But yeah, I think Her Business need this win.
Yeah, I think so.
And maybe they lose because Ali, having ditched Retribution during the kickoff show, because that's where they belong, he comes out and costs Kofi the match.
I mean, we can hope.
We can hope.
I fear that that's not the way it's going at the moment.
No. Okay, well, it's going to be exciting.
On Ricochet. That's the final missing piece.
Yeah,
we can do everything we want with Retribution if only we can get Ricochet.
Jeez Louise. Well, it'll be an exciting Sunday night. I think it's going to be a good pay-per-view. I think you're doing some stuff with WWE UK, right? On Sunday night?
Yes, I'm staying up to watch it, and I'm going to record some sort of reactions to the show and post them. And I think WWE UK are going to be posting what I'm doing as just a little sort of for anyone, for Skillet, basically, for the fan that isn't staying up to watch it until 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, wants to sort of catch up on what was going down last night and my reactions to it.
Nice. Nice. Well, I look forward to seeing all that, and we'll obviously be retweeting stuff on the WWGP account. Okay, well, have a good night on Sunday. I hope you enjoy the pay-per-view. I'm sure we'll be texting throughout. And that's it for the year. That is it for the year.
Wow.
Can't believe it. Episode 299. Yeah. Kev, you have been, I mean, you've been part of the show for a long time, and the fact that you've been on the show, I've interviewed you a couple of times over the years, but you've, when did you join officially this year? Is it the summer? Early summer?
During lockdown, wasn't it? Like during sort of definitely during COVID era. Yeah.
I feel like we've done a decent six month run. So thank you so much for everything and everything you're bringing to the show. You're part of the GP family. Nothing but positive vibes about your inclusion on the show. And it's just a joy to break down WWE with you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love it. It's the best bit of the week talking wrestling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listen, I want to say a big thank you to everyone who has listened to GP this year. It's been a very strange year for everybody across the world, bizarrely. And we've all been stuck at home for a large portion of the year, but WWE amazingly has rumbled on. We've had WWE talents on this show nearly every week. I think there's maybe only been three or four episodes of GP this year when we haven't had a superstar guest. So we've had so many people come on the podcast this year. So I'm eternally grateful to WWE for organizing that for me, and lots more to come next year. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been actually producing a show with Drew McIntyre. It's a bit of fun for Christmas. It's being released on WWE UK's Facebook page on Boxing Day, but it's a WWE quiz of the year. So test your knowledge and all things 2020 with a fun quiz hosted by WWE champ Drew McIntyre. Really fun to be working with him over the last couple of weeks. So make sure you check that out on the WWE UK Facebook page. It's dropping on Boxing Day, so you and your family can sit down and see how well you know WWE and what's been going down this year. So that's been a lot of fun, and GP generally this year has been so much fun. We really appreciate all the support, all the downloads, all the listens, all the tweets, all the comments, all the Facebook comments, everything. Just thank you, thank you, thank you. Couldn't do this without you. And we will be back with a bang in mid-January as we start building up to the Royal Rumble with episode 300 of GP. It is going to be a lot of fun. Kev, are you excited about all things 2021?
Hey, it can only get better than 2020.
Man, what a year. What a year.
But WWE has kept us entertained through it all.
Well, it has. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's just remarkable what they've managed to do. And actually, just one final note about the Thunderdome. I look at AEW, and this is, I'm not comparing, I'm not being negative about AEW, but when I see clips of AEW and I see like a smattering of fans in the seats, but then lots of empty seats around them, it looks a bit weird, and it feels a bit of a shame, you know, if you see Sting come back and there are just handfuls of people around. So actually, I really think WWE should stick with the Thunderdome until they can have arenas full of people. Like, instead of starting off with 500 people in the crowd or 1,000 people, which is going to feel very small fry, I think stick with the Thunderdome, because it's an incredible solution that they came up with earlier on in the summer. And I think that night, when they can have an arena full of fans again, it's going to be the most must-watch show of the year.
Yeah, it's going to be magical, isn't it?
But yeah, it is. It's going to be magical, because the reaction of the crowds, just the idea that people are all together again, like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. So I think WWE, stick with the Thunderdome, even if you can have 1,000 people at a time. Don't do it. Wait until you can have that 15,000 arena jam-packed full of fans, because that will be just, it would just be incredible. And hopefully not too far away.
Yeah. And also, like, for all that we might say, you know, oh, it's difficult, you know, to the points we were saying, the problems with X, Y, and Z. You know, if you look back across this year, and obviously 2020 has been sort of a ridiculously horrible year, but you look back at what WWE have done, we've had the Royal Rumble that Drew came through and won and, you know, eliminated Lesnar and then went on to WrestleMania and won the title. We had the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse match. We've had Randy Orton and Edge with that great match, you know, that they labeled the greatest wrestling match ever. We had SummerSlam was unbelievable. And we had the whole Seth Rollins and Dominic story. The creation of the Thunderdome. We've had Roman Reigns and his whole return and his matches with his story with Jay. We've had a good run with Drew and Randy. We've had Alexa Bliss join The Fiend and all that's thrown up. We've had NXT UK has made it back on, and we had that Ilya Dragunov. Dragunov? Ilya, yeah. Dragunov.
I love that you still struggle with his name.
I can never say his name. Dragunov and Walter match, which was unbelievable. The Heritage Cup. And NXT just continued to be brilliant. Like, War Games was sensational. So I just think, under the most difficult circumstances, I know there's probably some things I've forgotten as well. Someone will tweet and go, how could you not mention this? You know, but in the most difficult circumstances and all of the problems that, you know, we'll always talk about as fans, we've still been pretty well entertained this year.
And, well, I think the thing, I mean, that's an amazing list. And I love that you're capping off the show being really positive and making us think about all the great things that have happened this year, because you're absolutely bang on. There have been some wonderful things to happen in WWE over 2020. But I think the thing that you have forgotten from the list that people will tweet about is probably Gronk hosting WrestleMania.
Oh, God, how could I forget?
Yeah.
Gronk.
Yeah, Gronk.
And R-Truth becoming the most decorated wrestler of all time in terms of title wins.
Well, I mean, he's had a lot of title wins, and that, in fact, is a question on the WWE quiz of the year. How many title victories has he had from December 2019 to December 2020? You can find out on Boxing Day, so do check that out. But yes, Kev, wonderful way to cap off the show. Thank you for reminding us that WWE is still a thing of beauty. It is something we love. And yes, we get frustrated. Yes, we pick up on the negatives, but it all comes from a good place. We just want it to be as good as possible. So onwards and upwards for 2021.
Yeah.
Right, Kev, where can people find you on the soosh?
At Kevy Clifton, K-E-V-I Clifton.
Lovely. And you can follow me at James D'Lo on Twitter and Instagram. But more importantly, follow the show at WWEGP on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/GorillaPositionWWE. And it would do us a merry favor if you subscribe to the newsletter. Just head to GorillaPositionWWE.com, enter your name and email address, and that's it. That's all you have to do. It takes 10 seconds, and it's a really great way to help us out. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much again for everything this year. To each and every one of our listeners, we really appreciate you. To everyone who follows us across social media, thank you. Thank you to WWE for giving us so many wonderful interviews this year. And there is a lot more and many big things to come in 2021. And you shall find out what those things are very soon. Thank you so much for listening. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we shall see you in January for episode 300 of Gorilla Position.